Geico presents Yikes! Another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
The internet can be your window to the world, or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is David Double D Dennis for another Dave and Will commentary, and I'm joined with...
Will, the Stash Man Stashnik.
And we're here to continue our series of Don Bluth commentaries for y'all with Anastasia. So, yeah, I guess without further ado, we will...
Adieu.
Okay, yeah, we're going to start the commentary basically like what we always do, where we count down from five, and then I'll press play. Just so everyone's on the same page, this is the first disc of the Family Fun edition of Anastasia, and I have my cursor over the play movie on my PS3, so I'm about to press the enter on the Blu-ray DVD remote. So, Will, why don't you do the honors and count us in from five and then say go, and as soon as you say go, I'll press enter on my remote.
All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. It's just loading now, doing a little sparkly thing. And we're about to start. So... basically, we recorded the Land Before Time commentary before this, but our plan was actually to do Anastasia first. I think we're a little bit more well-researched for this one. Interesting little fact while we're looking at this 20th Century Fox logo here is that this was Fox Animation Studios' first film. And their last film would actually be Titan A.E. a few years later. They only made two films, and then they went out of business, unfortunately. So, for as much as everyone seems to love Don Bluth now, he kind of, like, ran that company into the ground, which is unfortunate. just excuse me for a moment. I'm just going to close a window here.
Oh, okay.
Now, this is, I can't remember, Angela Lansbury doing the voice, I think, of the grandmother. She was the lady from Murder, She Wrote, wasn't she?
Yes, okay. That's correct. Now, there's several historical inaccuracies here, but first of all, this is 1916, while Nicholas was at the front of World War II. He was, or World War I, I should say. Like, he was in the front lines, really, so he wouldn't be here right now.
Which one is Nicholas?
The father.
Oh.
Yeah. And also, another one is Anastasia at this point. She was born... let me see. She was born in 1901, meaning that this would mean she's like 15 years old now. So I'm hoping she would remember her family at 15.
Well, doesn't she like in the movie? I think she like hits her head or something.
It's the amnesia angle.
Yeah, that's what happens in all these movies. Okay. And they always have the characters meeting as kids in a lot of these movies, and you see that here. I don't know how I feel about that kind of unnecessary to have like the young version of Dimitri there.
It's kind of like in Star Wars where they have to have like C-3PO with like Anakin Skywalker.
I was going
to
say, it's like a George Lucas Star Wars prequel moment going on where we have to show every character as a young version of themselves. Like, do we really need young Boba Fett?
And then they ruined Empire Strikes Back with having to have the, what's his name again? The guy played Jango's voice?
Tamora Morrison.
Yeah, they have his voice playing over Boba Fett, which is terrifying. Okay, let's get off of Star Wars for now.
Sorry.
Completely different. Sorry.
Okay, now here we're introduced to Rasputin. He wasn't really like... I wouldn't say he wasn't a bad guy, but he didn't really want to, like, kill the family, I don't think.
Or... No, he had, like, no, he was, it's true what they say in here, he was power hungry, basically. He did want to have some sort of control over the family to an extent, but not to actually kill them, because then, what, you're, like, you're losing your dinner ticket.
Yeah.
That's the other thing here, though, is the Romanovs never hated Rasputin, actually. They're making him sound like he's a traitor. In fact, Nicholas's wife, Alexandra, constantly defended him from anyone who would slander him, even until, you know, their death. This is because Rasputin supposedly, believed then they had, like, the power to ease the suffering of the Tsar's youngest son, Alexei, who had hemophilia and would subsequently need emergency medical care when sustaining an injury. They believed that he would heal him through, like, simple prayer. So they thought it was like a holy man, like they stated before. Though most people now believe that he used actually hypnosis to actually, which has been proven to actually help in some cases of some diseases and other illnesses because it relaxes the patient and allows the natural healing processes to take over.
Huh. This is a really creepy scene for like a G-rated movie. Mm-hmm. Christopher Lloyd is doing the voice here. And it's kind of weird because he's such a likable kind of guy, but, I mean, he plays a villain in quite a few movies, including this and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And even Star Trek V, I think, he was a Klingon.
Oh,
yeah, it's kind of weird. But
that's the only thing here that's another, going back to historical inaccuracies, this kind of resembles the February Revolution, which kind of started the, which caused Nicholas to abdicate, actually, because then, you know, there was, like, his reign was falling apart at this point. The only thing was, is February Revolution took place in 1917, well, this is 1916. So there are some, obviously, dates mixed up in here as well. The only thing is, though, they make the Soviets sound bad, like, you know, like, well, of course, you know, when communism took over at the end of the October Revolution, you know, they got pretty bad. But, I mean, Nicholas was a terrible ruler. Like, he was concerned more about, you know, his family than he was about the living conditions of, you know, regular people. The working conditions for industrial workers in Russia were terrible, as was the state of living. And food and other necessities were running short because of the war effort, which was going horribly wrong. So it's not much of a wonder why the Bolsheviks went boondock saints on their asses. Oh, another interesting thing. We just missed Rasputin's death, but this is one of the most like interesting things.
Yeah,
getting into Rasputin's death, there are a few different accounts as to how it actually went down.
I think he was killed like three times, or not killed like three times, but it took like three attempts to kill him or something?
No, 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 it's not necessarily the attempts, it's different people. Like, some people say it was like a British secret agent that actually killed him. But, however it went down, though, certainly he didn't die just because, you know, he didn't crack through the ice like Harry and It's a Wonderful Life. The more commonly believed version, the one that we were just talking about, and the version I think is the most badass, because this guy's crazy, is that he was murdered by Russian nobles, who thought that he had too much influence over the Empress, and thus, like, the entire country, because since Nicholas is at the front, she took most of the responsibility. Now, he did end up in the river at the end, though that was not the original plan. First, they tried to poison him. They put, a huge amount of cyanide into his drink. They lured him down to a basement where they you know, like feeding them food and stuff like that.
See, I read somewhere that they only put a, like, they didn't put as much of a dosage as they should have, and that's why I didn't kill them.
That's like one story, but another dosage. Story was that, they put it in the drink, but he, apparently he didn't actually drink much, apparently, at least not what they were serving him. And then they put it in the cake, but apparently they're saying it might have, dissolved through the baking process. But regardless of the poisoning, he says that didn't work. So he, you know, the guy, they were wondering, you know, we got to do something because, we want to make sure they can hide the body before dawn. So, that didn't work, so they shot him, and then shot him three more times after that. So that didn't work, so they beat the shit out of him until he stopped moving. They proceeded to bind the body, roll it up in a rug, and throw that shit in the river. Now, when his body was discovered, they found that not only did he have water in his lungs, meaning that he was still alive when they chucked his immortal ass into the river, but that he had also broken out of his bonds. So he was still not only alive, but well. So they like, okay, so recapping, they tried to poison him, they shot him four times.
Didn't they shoot him once in the face as well?
That's, yeah, they had actually photos of that, actually. And, you know, they did that, and then they beat the crap out of him, and then they tied him up, threw him in the river, and he was still alive, and it's insane. Another thing that's really weird is that there are several, like, urban legends that they, the nobles, before they had finally killed him, or at least when he was unconscious, they cut his penis off. Yeah, wow. And so, like, there was supposed to be some kind of, like, going around, like, gypsy camps as to, like, you know, some kind of, like, powerful, like, little, like, talisman, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But that's why, I mean, it's just, like, Rasputin in general is just an amazingly interesting, you know, person just in reality. It's just crazy to think that someone can actually sustain that kind of amount of injuries and actually, you know, not, you know, and they didn't die at first, but definitely just sustaining that amount of injuries before dying is insane.
Which is why there's rumors that he was, like, immortal and all this stuff, mm-hmm. and that's why he's the bad guy in Hellboy.
Oh, that's right,
and,
yeah.
Which comes right out of the comics, actually, which are a lot darker and a lot closer to the actual, like, Russian mythology, if you ever get a chance to read those. They're pretty good.
No.
But yeah, he's kind of a interesting, creepy character in history. Yeah.
You just look at his pictures online. We ever have the chance, let's look at some, like, Google images of him. It's the freakiest looking guy ever.
Yeah.
This guy looks like he'll eat your soul.
Now, I guess I should take a little bit of time to talk about Don Bluth and his animation and stuff. Obviously, since this was Fox Animation Studios' first big film, they wanted to, like, kind of go big or go home. Kind of a weird choice since they were doing Anastasia, which is such, like, a tragic historical story. Something probably the reason they did it was because it was something that Disney would never touch. But the animation in this film is just beautiful. And it's interesting, too, because if you're watching this on the DVD, you'll see that it's in, like, a 2.85:1 aspect ratio, which you don't really see very often in animated films. They're usually in, like, that 16:9. So they went really widescreen with this to get, like, that kind of epic feel to it, which is great. Definitely better than the Land Before Time that in our last commentary, where not only was it only available in full screen, but it was just a horrible transfer. Here, at least, the DVD transfer looks actually really nice, which is great. Something that's kind of weird, too, I would have to recommend to anyone watching this, if you don't, or listening to this, if you don't have a copy of the Family Fun edition of Anastasia, go out and pick it up. You can probably find it for $5 at, like, an HMV or something. One of the things it comes with is a commentary with Don Bluth and his name Gary Goldman, I think.
Yeah, Gary Goldman.
And I think the main thing you'll notice in that commentary is just how much of a perfectionist Don Bluth is. Like, he compliments everything else and everybody else about this movie. He's like, oh, yeah, the acting is great. The music is great. But the one thing he's always disappointed with is his own animation. He's constantly like, oh, I wish this part was brighter. I wish this thing was more vivid. I wish these characters looked more like real people. And he just points out all these mistakes with the movie that you wouldn't even think, like, you don't even notice them, really, unless he points them out. So, I guess a lot of directors are kind of perfectionists like that, yeah. But...
Most notably, Scorsese, actually. Like, he would, like, look at his films after he's done, like, when they're editing, and he's like, oh, no, this is terrible. And everyone's just like, what are you talking about? This is Raging Bull. This is a fantastic film.
Yeah. I think Kurosawa was like that, too. This film, I find, never really gets the respect it deserves, though.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah.
I think it actually is... one of the better animated films of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, like, in terms of animation, like, the voice acting is pretty good. And since they're singing right now, I guess it's a good time to bring up the actual music, which is just great in this movie. It was nominated for 2 Oscars. One was for David Newman's score, and the other one was actually for this song, Journey to the Past, which, along with all the other songs in the movie, was written by Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens. I'm not sure what else they did. I know Stephen Flaherty has done other stuff. I just can't remember what. But... yeah, people forget that this was nominated for Oscars and that the animated film Oscar didn't exist at the time. It wasn't introduced until 2001, so it's possible that this could have been nominated for that if it did exist at the time.
Apparently he did do Schoolhouse Rock back in the 70s, Stephen Flaherty. And then he also did the TV series documentary for Angels in New York, which was fairly large.
Okay, good for him.
Not too much. Those wide amounts of time when he didn't do anything. He went, like, last, like, he did Schoolhouse Rock in 1973, and then he did The Magical Journey of Anastasia in 1997. So there was, like, 20 years when he didn't do anything.
It's possible that he... like, it's possible that he was doing stuff besides film. Like, I don't know, his name just sounds so familiar. He might be in, like, a band or something, or working on Broadway, I don't know.
Yeah, there are a lot of Broadway singers, actually, in this film, so that's possible.
I love that shot where she makes it out to the... I don't know, hill, and it's like that big epic wide shot. You don't see those kinds of shots in animated films a lot. And it really kind of elevates this film to a different level. I think I appreciated this movie a lot more when I saw it on DVD, because on VHS it's in full screen, so you don't really get that scale as much. Actually, I think the first time I saw this movie was with you and your sister and my sister, like, in our basement, like, way back, like, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing in theaters, and I remember I was freaked out by Rasputin, especially at the end of the skeletal structure.
Again, it's kind of intense for, like, a PG movie, or a G movie, actually.
G movie, actually, yeah.
I can't believe this movie got away with a G rating.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I can see, like, you know, back, like, you know, like, with Land Before Time and stuff like that, but, you know, because that was such a long time ago, but this was 1997, you know? So, I mean, it was, you would think they would be a little harsher on ratings at that point, but I guess they didn't really feel that... a movie about people being executed deserved a PG rating. Of course, obviously they didn't show that, but, like, I always say that if Don Bluth had, like, put, like, the entire, like, not only, like, execution of, like, Rasputin, but also the royal family in this film. Like, he'd be my personal hero. It'd be an R-rated film, but I would be like, oh my god. Oh man.
It would be interesting to see, like, a live-action version of this. Did they actually make a movie, like, back in, like, the 30s or 40s about this?
They might have. I think they made, like, I think they made, like, some TV series back in, like, the 80s. I think there was a TV series, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I could see that. There's always, like, a cute sidekick character in most animated films.
Well, for the good guy and the bad guy as well. I mean, you got Bartok in here. I suppose, Paco?
Is it? I don't know what the dog's name is. I wasn't really paying attention.
I don't think they give him a name yet, but...
Oh, he's so cute.
His little wing ears.
Now, is the royal palace, like, did this actually happen? It was just, like, closed off like that?
I don't really know much about, like, actual, like, what happened to the remnants of the monarchy after the revolution. You would think they would, like, pillage it and just, like, you know, just take everything that's, like, gold, but... Maybe they would... I mean, I don't really know what else
I know now. Now the palace has basically been restored, and you can take, like, a tour in there, kind of like the White House. Because there's, if you, again, going back to the DVD, it's fantastic DVD. Like, it comes with so much crap on here. Like, I mean, the entire movie of Bartok the Magnificent is just kind of thrown on there as an added bonus. But also, there's a pretty in-depth making-of documentary that's about 45 minutes long. And they talk about how they actually went to Russia and photographed a bunch of footage of exterior shots of the buildings that they were using in the movie, as well as what the interior of the palace looked like. And for the most part, the animators used references from actual photos to animate the interior of the palace to make it as authentic as possible. So with the exception of a few details, this is pretty much what it would have looked like. Obviously, they kind of make it look kind of dusty and degraded, but...
that would be Alexei.
The little kid?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is that the one that had hemophilia?
Yeah.
Is that why he's, like, shuffling a little bit? Even though hemophilia wouldn't make you shuffle, but maybe they wanted to show his weakness. I don't know.
Maybe they beat him because they thought it was like a demon inside him. Take you, Satan.
Kind of an interesting, like, background in this shot too. None of the people are moving, but there's a lot of detail there as well. I guess we haven't mentioned the voice cast either, really. Meg Ryan is Anastasia. She didn't really do much after this. Like, I haven't seen Meg Ryan in anything lately.
Yeah, she's kind of falling off the face here. She did, like, a few, like, mediocre films, but that's about it.
It's kind of sad, but basically in Hollywood, you have, like, kind of a short life if you're female. Compared to if you're male, where you can keep acting into when your hair starts going gray.
Yeah.
I
think the only significant film she actually did after Anastasia was You've Got Mail, which was pretty big back in the 90s.
And Kate and Leopold was kind of... Yeah. I don't know if it wasn't really good, but I mean, it was big-ish. Like, I've heard of it, at least. And then John Cusack does the voice of Dimitri. I always get his name mixed up with Petrie from Land Before Time.
Dimitri Petrie.
and which I didn't know it was John Cusack when I was a kid, but I don't think I knew who John Cusack even was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And Kelsey Grammer does Vlad's voice. Yeah. Which is funny, because he's like the only character that really does a Russian accent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's really the only good actor. I mean, John Cusack's okay. Meg Ryan's bear. You know, her kind of ship left in the 90s. And John Cusack, I don't know, 2012 was pretty bad. But but Kelsey Grammer, you know, he doesn't really try and, like, be in huge movies. You know, he just kind of sails along, and he's done, like, Broadway stuff. And, you know, he just kind of, you know, only does stuff that he thinks he can do, doesn't go out of his range. And, you know, he is so talented. He's really one of the only actual main characters in here that actually sings for himself. Meg Ryan and John Cusack had professional singers do their songs.
Yeah, Kelsey Grammer, Christopher Lloyd, and Bernadette Peters all do their own singing. It's kind of weird, too, that Kirsten Dunst actually does the voice of the young Anastasia.
She hasn't done anything in a while either.
No, she's suffering from Spider-Man 3 syndrome, as I like to call it. Because after Spider-Man 3, her and Tobey Maguire sort of just didn't really do anything. They both did like two or three films after that.
I think I'm still suffering from Spider-Man 3 syndrome. I think anyone who saw it is still suffering from Spider-Man 3 syndrome.
Another weird kind of member of the voice cast is J.K. Simmons is actually one of the members of the vocal choir. Which we only know that because Will and I watched the making of together, and there's like a shot where they're showing all the people singing, and J.K. Simmons is like off to the side. And yeah, there he is on IMDb, ensemble and character voices. So, kind of weird. But I guess he wouldn't have really been like, no one really knew who J.K. Simmons was back in the 90s. It was just kind of an obscure character actor, like, until he did the Spider-Man films. But yeah, I'm not really looking forward to John Cusack playing Edgar Allan Poe.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, there's a movie coming out, or might even already be out by the time this commentary comes out, depending. It's coming out, I think, later in 2011, like September, October. And it's called The Raven. And oh, it's 2012, actually. I thought it was late this year. I guess it's early next year. But basically, it's like the last days of Edgar Allan Poe, like after his wife dies, and there's like some kind of a murderer that's going around like imitating all of the stuff that happens in his short stories, and he's like trying to stop him. It's an interesting concept for a film. I just don't know how I feel about John Cusack playing Poe. Like, I always, it's weird, but I always imagine Johnny Depp playing Edgar Allan Poe if they ever made a movie out of him.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. Yeah. John Cusack just doesn't have a range of anything at all.
Yeah. Pretty much kind of the same in everything.
There's Bartok, played by Hank Azaria, who's a regular on The Simpsons.
Yeah, he does like 20 voices. Yeah, yeah, a lot of. I think he's mostly known for Apu. I think he does Moe from Moe's Tavern. And Chief Wiggum.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And here he's doing a completely different kind of voice with
Bartok.
Kind of funny Russian accent.
Well, it's not really Russian.
Well, it.
It sounds more
Jewish.
It's
more like, yeah, I was going to say, it's more like a, it's like a Russian Jew. Yeah,
which is Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
You guess he's from Fiddler on the Roof?
But for some reason, like, I always thought that was Eugene Levy doing his voice.
It does sound kind of sounds bit,
a little bit like him. Like a little higher pitched version of Eugene Levy.
Yeah. Yeah, except Eugene Levy's voice doesn't really crack that much. But he does sound that kind of, you know, lower kind of monotone voice. It sounds very Canadian, because he is Canadian.
Yep. Now, speaking of the historical inaccuracies of this film, one thing that is historically accurate is the character of Bartok. A lot of people didn't know that Rasputin actually had a rare albino bat as a pet. Mm-hmm. And he used it in a lot of his rituals and stuff like that.
Yeah. It was when he went to Romania, he picked it up. And that's actually where the rumors actually started of having a disembodied penis. He cut off the... Bartok's penis, and he would use it in a lot of potions and stuff, and that's usually what he healed Alexei with.
And that's why Bartok has such, like, a high-pitched voice here.
Mm-hmm, yeah. He's a eunuch.
Bartok kind of got his own spin-off film, which is Bartok the Magnificent, which you can find on the Anastasia DVD. It's kind of a lame movie. I watched it once just to see it, because I think it was the only Don Bluth film I had never seen. I think it's one of the few that was released direct-to-video as well. And, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't horrible, it's just kind of, it's pretty forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
Although it was also directed by Don Bluth, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's not very often that side characters having their own movies are that successful.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty bad.
Yeah, I think they just did it because Anastasia was relatively successful for a Don Bluth film. Mm-hmm. Sadly, most of his films didn't actually make that much money. So the studio was just like, yeah, let's milk this. We can't really make an Anastasia 2. So,
yeah.
What else can we do? How about a Bartok movie? It has Jennifer Tilly in it.
Okay,
I don't know.
One worth it.
He's Christopher Lloyd sort of like sing-talking. It's not really singing, he's just sort of talking in tune.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he does do a little bit of the singing, but the rest of it is Jim Cummings, who does the singing for Rasputin. I think he also plays the voice of Pooh Bear, I believe.
Yeah, he does, actually. Yeah. Pooh and Tigger. I think he's been the voice of Pooh and Tigger for a while, actually.
Mm-hmm. So, are they going to make a...
I'm really looking forward to that movie, by the way.
Are they going to make a spinoff where it's Winnie the Pooh and Tigger meet Rasputin? Where they're like cut up and used in a ritual?
Oh, man. This is kind of another thing that's a little bit dark for this movie. Just like the dark humor used with Rasputin, where like his body parts are falling off.
Oh, yeah.
And hanging out with all these bugs. I think he's supposed to be, it's not really hell, but I think it's supposed to be like limbo or something.
I don't really understand why he'd be in limbo.
Well, I think it has something to do with that green vial
that is
like keeping him alive, basically.
Okay. So it's like Voldemort in a Harry Potter series. He hasn't really fully died because he has the Horcruxes.
So that's like his Horcrux.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
He didn't think it through, though. He only had one, not seven.
Yeah, seven. Yeah, probably should have. I love those little bugs that are just, like, accompanying him. Are they bugs, or what are they?
Yeah, they're just, like, insects. I guess because no one likes insects, so they wouldn't go to heaven. But instead of God's nice enough, he's not going to send them to hell, so they're all just stuck in limbo. I can't remember how he is like how he makes it from limbo to like the real world though. It's kind of it's not really explained very well. There's the bad guy song. Wow, this sounds kind of cool on the surround sound. It's going to the back speaker now.
Yeah, the dog's name is Puka apparently.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like a Puka spirit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Apparently, Anastasia did have a dog, but his name is Jimmy, apparently. It was a King Charles Spaniel, if you want to look that up on the internet.
Wouldn't that be kind of the same type of dog this is? Because I think Puka is a Cocker Spaniel as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's just a different name. Another historical inaccuracy. They just can't live without.
I think it's just because Jimmy sounds like a stupid name for a dog in a movie. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
They wanted everyone to have like a Russian name, and Jimmy isn't really Russian. It's more almost like American. Like,
yeah. Hey, I'm Jimmy Ramone. It's my impression of an Italian American.
What's he like marking in the book there? I didn't even.
Arguments won.
Oh, okay.
Jimmy, she only had like 3, and Anastasia had like 80. Something like that.
In the short time that they've known each other, they've already argued that much.
Mm-hmm.
So much sexual tension. Fine.
Just punches her.
Bitch. I know it'll keep you quiet. There we go. Now let's cup a feel.
Jesus Christ. I guess we should actually get into actually where the stories came from of the different people who women that they tested and thought that were actually said that they were the actual Grand Duchess Anastasia. There were like a whole bunch of them, but the one that this movie is based off of, it's the most well-known one, was Anna Anderson. She was the whole entire time when she did this was in the 20s, and she actually went through quite a lot of not really training, but she went through a whole lot of time when they actually did think that she was Anastasia. But it turned out that, like, obviously she wasn't. And actually, a long time ago later, they found Anastasia's remains in 2008. So,
oh.
Yeah.
So she was actually killed, like, with the rest of the family?
Yeah.
Okay. So this whole movie is kind of based on
Anna Anderson. Hoax. Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even the actual real person.
Yeah.
These, like, green bats are pretty freaky, too. Mm-hmm. I've always liked the look of like trains in the 1920s,
mm-hmm.
1930s.
Very rustic.
Yeah. And it always reminds me of Alfred Hitchcock movies, because I think almost at least half of Hitchcock's movies have a scene on a train. It was like a staple. So it's kind of cool. There's not many animated films that take place or have scenes that take place on trains. Except for maybe Dumbo. I don't know.
I'll never forget to have another donut.
Oh, Dimitri's gotta play the hero.
They actually went through a lot of different designs for Dimitri to kind of get it right. There's another bonus feature on this DVD where Don Bluth is kind of talking about how he designed the character. I think it's actually the one where he's like he's showing you how to draw him. And he's talking about how it took them a long time to get the right balance of handsome and ugly, basically. Because if you make him too handsome, then he's not as like realistic and like down to earth. But if you make him not handsome enough, then people won't like him, and Anastasia wouldn't be attracted to him. So they kind of had to get that balance. So you can kind of see there he has a bit of like a crook nose and stuff like that. He's not perfect, but boom. Yeah.
Oh.
One thing Don Bluth was always really great at was, like, action scenes. Titan AE has a few really good ones as well. But this one definitely sticks out.
Oh, yeah. I think I can afford to have the great action sequences because, like I was, if you listen to the Land Before Time series, we introduced the idea that all the Don Bluth films are, you know, they deal more with more adult themes, and thus, you know, you can have more adult sequences in it, such as, you know, action sequences where things blow up and people are on the verge of death, as opposed to in most Disney films where they're in those kind of scenarios, but it's never as hectic as it is in most of these.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot more intense, I guess.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Ooh.
There's a bit of, like, a use of CGI in a few of these scenes, too, but they do a pretty good job of making it kind of seamless. And there's a lot of really great, like, 3D overlaying in this movie. There's a lot of, like, flyby shots and stuff like that. Or scenes that take place in a location where they're showing it from different angles. And that's kind of a hard thing to do in animation where it's kind of a flat medium. To do kind of an overhead flyby shot. Like, you see the opening establishing shot of St. Petersburg at the beginning of the movie, and then when they go to Paris later, there's another one. Is difficult and expensive to do in an animated film. There goes his thumb.
You gotta wonder why Rasputin had actually put up with Bartok after he gave him the reliquary.
You would think, like, I'm gonna break this thing that's keeping you alive.
Yeah, exactly.
You are a dick. Like, yeah. You think he would have just, like, crushed him after that?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, it looks like he attempts to do it now, but I mean, just, I mean, he's just, like, you know, he served his usefulness, and even after this, I believe Bartok starts feeling empathy for the Anastasia character, and so he doesn't really never really actually does serve any purpose to Rasputin himself after he gives him the reliquary.
He doesn't really serve much of a purpose in this movie at all. He's just there
comic
for
relief.
Yeah,
because you need a silly character apparently.
Like that was the trailer shot.
Yeah, pretty much.
That
yeah.
was in every trailer for this movie. I'd give her a ha and a hi-ya.
Oh, this is the nasty sound. Oh, there's the there's the Indiana Jones tracking shot.
Going through Poland and Czechoslovakia. Yeah, there's a lot of really great, like, painting in this movie. Mm-hmm. You don't really see that in animation nowadays, where it's all CGI, pretty much. They just sort of build an artificial environment. You can put the characters wherever you want, and then put the camera wherever you want. And, it's still difficult to do a CG animated film, but, like, logistically, it's a lot easier. Which is why this form of animation kind of phased out, and then Don Bluth kind of became a dinosaur, which is kind of sad. But
mm-hmm. Well, this film is another example of Don Bluth's not only use of masterful use of animation, but colors. You know, in Land Before Time,
yeah.
He used all the, you know, the kind of earth tones. You know, all the colors for sunsets, and, you know, it's pretty beautiful. And now it's almost more, it's more springtime colors, and it can, it starts out very dim, and then when they get through Poland and Czechoslovakia here, it just brightens up to the extent that it's just a flower that was in winter that just blooms, and it just, he does it in such a masterful way that it's seamless, you know?
There's a much broader color palette in this movie than there was in Land Before Time, because each location and character has kind of their own color palette. When you're looking at Rasputin in his lair, it's like a lot of really harsh reds and greens. Here, it's like you said, it's like nice springtime. One cool thing too, you can kind of see the water reflection effect going on the characters in the wood. It's little details like that you don't really notice as much when you're a kid, like the shadows as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact that you don't notice it is a testament to how good it is. I think you would notice it if it wasn't there. It would look kind of cheap.
Yeah, just be really just two-dimensional as opposed to this actually gives it the realistic feel.
Well, it's like Don Bluth says in one of the bonus features, talking about the difference between a cartoon and an animated film. Whereas a cartoon, you can just do whatever you want. You can have the characters flying or standing in the air before they fall. But in an animated film, you're trying to make it realistic. So if a character were to walk out of a building, they would fall and kill themselves. So you have a little less room to play around. And you have to kind of find that balance between reality and what's surreal, I guess.
Mm-hmm. This scene reminds me of the movie Hannah, which came out earlier this year, where they have to have her memorize her entire life story. Because, like, in Hannah, she just has to, like, memorize all these facts about her life, whereas, like, she can just spout them out whenever prompted. And so in this, they're, like, telling her all these different stories, which actually probably did, in the movie here, at least exist in her life, but they're helping her remember. And she now can just spout it out whenever she wants to. It's a process of indoctrination.
Ho ho. They always have that, like, Batman transition between these shots. I think there's...
I love the driver. He looks
I was
going like,
to say that car driver looks like the bad guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That's what
Ark.
I was about to say, yeah.
He has like the same hat and glasses.
Your fire is dying.
Hey, car driver, you want some of this water? I've got a little bit left. I'm sorry, I'm not thirsty. This guy's really weird.
This guy is so weird. I'm sure at some point in his life, his face will melt.
I love that one kid in the background, like, doesn't move the whole time. if we weren't recording this commentary, I would have just rewound and just watched that kid, because he's just like staring at the ground. He doesn't like his face doesn't move. He's just like. Has, like, this dumb smile on his face the whole time. It's hilarious. Oh, man.
You would think there'd be more protocol that it would take to actually get them onto the bus. Or onto the boat.
The boat?
Like, they need to, like, show their passports or something. Unless this is just some kind of freighter or something.
Yeah, I mean, I guess security would have been a lot less tight back then. I think as long as you could pay whatever the charge was to get on the boat, then you could get on the boat.
No, I mean, just like the whole entire communist rule, they want to make sure that no one really leaves the country.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they're already out of the country at this point, because they already showed them going past, like, Czechoslovakia. Mm-hmm. So,
but, I mean,
they don't really show how they got past the border, though. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Well, Nicholas, though, he did kind of when Poland was annexed, he did own parts of, it was under the parts of Poland and other countries around us, adjacent to Russia, were part of the monarchy, so possibly
that's,
they
that's
would still
That's true, be. Actually. The USSR up until, like, I think up until the end of World War II controlled a lot, including, like, Finland
mm-hmm.
and Sweden and a lot of like the countries ending in Stan, like Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan. Pretty much all of those were at one point under the USSR, I think, except for Afghanistan and Pakistan. I think Pakistan was part of India at one point.
Mm. This is the scene where the sexual tension starts to break and the two characters of Dmitri and Anastasia start to bond.
Pretty much kind of an important moment in if you're writing a romance movie.
mm-hmm.
You can't really have the tension going throughout the whole thing. At some point, you have to have them actually kind of liking each other. Because otherwise, you just have two characters that hate each other completely.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. They should, I don't know. I can't do it. I'm sorry, I like men. Thank you for helping me discover my sexuality. Exactly. Vlad, come over here.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I was just like, what do you think Vlad and I have been doing all these years?
I think that shot is the ship is CGI.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was 3, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
Technology Truths, brought to you by Geico.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at geico.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
That's the other thing, though, with the music box, which is kind of tied to her necklace there. They said Together in Paris. Grand Empress Maria, who is played by Angela Lansbury in here, she didn't go to France after the revolution. She went to Denmark, actually. So that wouldn't have actually, you know, occurred. Plus, in real life, Anastasia didn't have that much of a connection with her grandmother. It was more or less her mother had more of a connection with her grandmother, who was Queen Victoria, actually, of England.
Hmm. Oh, there she's calling it Puka.
Puka.
Which, I think a puka is like a type of animal spirit, if I'm not mistaken.
Like in, like, Japanese culture, or?
I don't know what it comes from. I think it's Celtic, actually.
It looks like Welsh. It's a Welsh, Welsh or other type of, like, an Irish fairy.
Yeah, so that's sort of Irish is like Celtic, kind of.
Yeah, Irish and Scottish share the Celtic heritage. There's Alexi again. He turns into a demon
in
here,
but kind of creepy scene. The scene also kind of freaked me out.
Oh, yeah.
As a kid.
Puka knows what's up. Dogs have regardless of what we want to say about this film, it is true, though, that dogs do have, like, some kind of, like, sixth sense of being able to know when their masters are in trouble. Or even that now, actually, some dogs, they're training dogs to be actually smell, kind of sense out diseases like cancer and everything.
Really?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Weird.
It was on NBC. I'm not sure how legit that is, but still. Definitely do know when their masters are in danger.
Yeah, there's been a lot of different cases where they've saved them from fires and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier about the, like, surprising amount of peril that Don Bluth puts in his films.
This part is terrifying. Those are her sisters, Olga, Tatiana, and Maria, who are all killed in the basement. Then the reason why they thought that Anastasia might have lived was because since she wasn't in the basement, they thought that, you know, she had gotten away, but apparently her body was just cremated. She was burned along with Alexei, apparently. Man, it took a bad trip.
Yeah, there's the, yeah. There's the freaky part. Like, oh, I shouldn't have taken all that acid. Whoop.
The voice. They cried out to me and then was suddenly silenced.
And it stops raining. I think this is the scene where his head goes into his chest. I love this scene.
Yeah, again, it's pretty, like, dark comedy.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That is, why is his body filled with water? That's kind of disturbing.
Maybe that's a reference to the fact that he was drowned.
Oh, probably. Because he has no lungs. I guess he doesn't need him in limbo, though. I guess this is the part where he gets resurrected in some way. Ooh.
Yeah, there's a deleted scene where they, like, sacrifice a baby and he drinks its blood. It's pretty horrifying.
He's got his Santa Claus cape going on. Magical gas, I guess. That's
he had a magical fart that transported him into the real world.
Wow.
Here's what I'm talking about with, like, the big, like, wide shots going on.
There's Sophie, who's played by Bernadette Peters, who is a Broadway veteran and one of my favorite Broadway stars, because she was in Into the Woods, which is kind of a Broadway musical about an amalgamation of different fairy tale characters trying to kill a giant. It's pretty good. I liked it. And she has an amazing
voice. Where did you actually get to see this? Like,
You can find it streaming on Netflix, actually.
Oh, okay.
I found the music at the library, and I was so interested in it that I actually looked for the actual Broadway play, and obviously it's not playing anymore, but I found it on Netflix with Bernadette Peters, and incredible. Boys.
Yeah, she was in quite a few movies in, like, the 80s and 90s. You don't really see her as much anymore. But yeah, I don't really know what she's up to now. Like, is she back on the stage or did she just kind of retire?
She's probably doing something, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I know she's done quite a bit of voice acting as well. I think she was in Beauty and the Beast or something.
Apparently she was in Ugly Betty, actually, a TV series.
Which I saw one episode of and couldn't watch it anymore.
Interesting.
Oh, and Land Before Time 10.
There's the Don Bluth connection.
Long neck migration. She was kind of hot back in the day, too.
Oh, yeah.
She was pretty sexy in a weird kind of way. My grandparents used to have, like, a sundial like that in their backyard. It's a pretty huge rack.
Yeah. I should hope so. It's pretty fat.
That's why it's the best when girls gain a bunch of weight and then lose it all really fast. I'm just saying. You know what's weird, too, is those pictures behind her look like real pictures.
I think, yeah, probably they are. Somehow they probably impose that to some extent. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how you would do that. Probably with computers.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's like a Monet painting behind them as well.
Monet.
Let me see. She like smashed them on the ground. Yeah, that's like a picture of some Pope on the side there.
Which, I'm not really sure Russian Orthodox people really were heading.
Well, this would have been in Paris, though. Oh, so, that's true. Most people in France are Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of hear David Newman does that a lot in his scores with, I don't even know what that is. It's like where the violin is like kind of plucking the doo, 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 doo. I think he does the score for a lot of Fox animated movies, actually, like Ice Age. Stuff. I think he did a few Pixar films. Yeah, it's kind of weird that they have like a Chanel store up there. I just noticed that.
I'm not sure.
I think that's real.
Yeah.
When did it start? Like, 1909.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it would have been around. Hey, look at that guy on the side who's, like, not moving. There's quite a few characters. Oh, maybe now they're moving. Okay. They kind of, like, keep them still until they have to move, basically. But those three guys there are just... Are they mannequins? I don't know. They just, like, stay in one place.
Well, they can't animate him. Like, they won't animate
That's
him.
That's true, yeah. They can't
to.
They can't animate everything.
There's Freud. There's a Top Gun moment.
The Top Gun guy. Those guys are kind of like pussies.
Yeah. Man, there's some hot chicks in this movie, man.
Where? Like in the background?
No. Just...
Oh, these chicks?
Yeah. And there's that French maid back at Sophie's place.
Oh, yeah. There's kind of a cool, like, circular tracking shot there, which again is very hard to achieve in animation, where you actually go around the table, so you have to see everything like three-dimensionally. Not easy. Yeah, I wonder if French maids still dress like that. There's got to be like a danger of getting raped. Because, I mean, who doesn't have a French maid fetish?
Gay guys, I guess.
Even then, they'd probably just dress other men as French maids.
The, behind back there, behind them, that almost looked like the backdrop there looked like Starry Night. Except, I mean, obviously, except for the stars.
What's Starry Night?
Van Gogh painting?
Oh, probably what they were trying to go for. Didn't Van Gogh live in Paris, or
at one point? Really know a whole lot about Van Gogh, except that he went insane and cut off his ear.
I know he's Dutch. That's, yeah, that makes sense, because Van pretty much indicates that you're Dutch, but Dutch. I don't know if he spent his whole life, like, living in Holland, or...
Hold on. Probably.
Huh. You think they would have tried to imitate, like, a Monet painting instead? Since he was actually French. Oh, John Cusack. You always get your girl because you're so cute and bland.
Yeah, I'm assuming, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Another big fetish, opera gloves.
Oh, man. Going on. We're talking about fetishes in a children's movie, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, they are actually at the opera, so I guess that would make sense.
Yes.
Can't go to the opera without opera gloves. I don't know why, but... I don't really remember this scene at all.
I remember the napkin. Oh, yeah, it's not a napkin. It's a playbill. Anyone know what play this is? It's like Cinderella.
Cinderella, yeah. This is kind of like the start of the third act, I guess.
Yeah.
Here's a good example of Don Bluth's like lighting technique that he used to sort of draw attention to the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You can see how the character's eyes are lit much brighter than the rest of their faces. Like right there, there's like a stream of light going across her eyes, which is basically to draw attention to her face in the widescreen format. It's really hard to draw attention to something that small when there's like when the frame is so wide. So to do it, you basically have to have everything on the sides of the frame pointing towards what you want the people to look at.
You tell that son of a bitch to get off my roof.
He, like, takes out a shotgun.
Oh, man. Another gator.
Nope.
except for this.
That's the other thing, though, is that Dowager Maria here wasn't her only surviving a member of her family, or Dowager, I should say. Apparently, her aunt Xenia, and her Xenia's husband Sandro, along with her daughter Irina and her husband Felix Uspov, along with several others, actually survived. Also, Felix actually was one of the ones that supposedly conspired for the plot to kill Rasputin. Actually,
oh
yeah.
Well, I guess it's, obviously you have to change things for the sake of making it a more entertaining film.
Yes.
Very few films are actually historically, or 100% historically accurate.
This is when the, trust is broken.
Yeah, pretty, this is what, in screenwriting you call the third act crisis. Where, like, one of the characters finds out that the other character is lying, or there's a misunderstanding between them. And, because usually by the end of the second act, you have the characters actually liking each other, and then to split up that liking, you have something come between them. Which is usually some kind of deception. Like, you see it in Shrek, and, I don't know, you see it in, like, 100 other films. Uh-oh.
Okie dokie, Dr. Jones.
So I like Dimitri just turns into short round.
Yeah, there's a lot of really great, like, fluid animation in this movie.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Like, I never really noticed it when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I always thought this movie was okay when I was a kid, but I was never really blown away by it. Mm-hmm. And I like it a lot more now that I'm older. It's not perfect, and obviously there's tons of historical inaccuracies, but they had to do what they could to make it a compelling story. I mean, if you had, like, five of her family members still alive, for example, it would have been kind of less spectacular that there was one other surviving member.
Yeah.
If there was like, oh, look, another surviving member of the Romanov family. We have eight of them over here.
It would have, like, lost that critical nature. You know, this is your last hope, you know. Because it's just, otherwise it's like,
you have eight other chances. There you go.
Although, at this point, communism would have taken over, wouldn't it? Already, so, like, what's the point of her even being like, oh, I'm the lost duchess, like, besides getting money and renown?
Well, I mean, you can tell Dowager here, she's still living in pretty good, circumstances here, so I guess there would be some money, but I think for Anastasia's sake, I think she just wants family, I think. Just to know that loved by someone. Actually, she belongs somewhere.
But, like,
somewhere.
There's no actual, like, kingdom for
there's
her
no
to,
power,
to
yeah.
return to.
Well, it's basically like...
But I guess in terms of, like, what she's trying to get, yeah, I guess since she's lived as an orphan, to try and have some kind of a family.
I mean, it's just like the royal family in Britain right now. They don't really hold a whole lot of judicial power. It's more or less just for show. Most of it's
like representative.
Exactly. But they're still living the high life. With Budweiser. Oh, no, that's Miller.
That's basically like the MacGuffin of the film, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, a MacGuffin is a term for like an object that sort of drives the plot. A good example is in Pulp Fiction, the briefcase that they're trying to get back from the three kids at the beginning of the movie. Or the Ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's tons of examples, but it's like a thing instead of a character, but that thing somehow becomes pertinent to the story. And I think it was Hitchcock who actually coined the term MacGuffin. I don't know what it meant, but
I'm trying to remember what it actually meant, but there was something that had to do with I don't want to just be this misleading or anything, but it had to do something with like a chicken or something. Like something that actually just kept on, you know, reappearing, and they thought that had some significance. I'm not sure if that's actually what it is or not, but I just remember hearing that. But
maybe. I guess the like black that he's wearing is supposed to be sort of indicative of the darkness of his situation. One thing that's kind of interesting about this movie, too, is, like, the costume changes. Anastasia starts out wearing, like, a lot of browns and greens, and then she ends up wearing, like, blues, and then I think she winds up in yellow by the end of the film. So it gets, like, brighter and brighter. And same thing with Dimitri here. He was kind of wearing, like, a brown outfit, and then he's wearing, like, this black overcoat to kind of show the darkness of the situation. Compared to a lot of animated films where the characters are just wearing the same thing throughout the entire movie, it's kind of an easy out, but here Bluth does something interesting where he actually changes the characters' outfits throughout the film to show their mood, which is kind of cool.
Pretty cool, Jimmy.
Yeah, I remember. I hate it.
her grandmother's actually a vindictive bitch. I just brought you here just to beat you and verbally abuse you.
Wow, it's a pretty intense crown.
Yeah,
that you were holding on to. I'm surprised no one tried to steal that or anything. Yeah, you don't really think, like, Russian history when you think of an animated film. What's up with those two, like, holes in her breasts?
They look like brooches.
Oh, okay. They look like holes, which is kind of weird.
Nipple holes.
Yeah.
Rubbing those tits too much.
Here now he's wearing a suit because he's taking the situation more seriously. What a coincidence.
Well, this whole movie's based on coincidences. And this is also that scene of not only taking the situation seriously, but also maturity. You know, knowing that, you know, what you did was for, you know, the good of Anastasia and not for, you know, you just actually getting your money, you know. And so that kind of also brings in the scenario that kind of redeems Dimitri from, you know, greed and selfishness for actually why he got into the situation, for now realizing that this is actually for her.
Kind of like Han Solo. Like,
Yeah, but he accepts the money, though.
Yeah, true, but...
He takes the shit out of that money.
but he also, like, does come back and mm-hmm. helps Luke take down Darth Vader at the end of the movie. Yeah. So, what the... There's a phone in this room, and it's ringing.
It's not an important call. We'll let the secretary take it.
Yeah, a.k.a. my mom. I'm just going to be answering it in the other room. I completely forgot there was actually a phone in this back bedroom.
Do they introduce Vlad's character as someone being in the military? Because it looks like he's like a commander or someone holding high esteem in the military here with all his badges and, you know, his royal sash and... just his outfit there, looking all spruce.
I don't know. They don't really mention it. Maybe it's one of those things that's not really explicitly said, but we're just supposed to sort of assume it. Because, I mean, this is after World War I, so it's possible that he fought in the First World War. Mm-hmm. And those badges are from, like acts of bravery or whatever. So, yeah, that's totally possible, like, given his age... He definitely could have fought in the First World War. So,
yeah, it's the things on his shoulders, epaulets. They're spelled, or they're that's what they're called, and their insignia shows rank in armed forces. So he must have been in the Russian military, which you'd think he'd actually try and be like fighting, like back during like the February Revolution. But apparently
maybe he was. They don't really show much of what happens. They don't really show what happens to him during that point, so it's possible that he was and that he just gave up.
He's like, fuck this.
Well, no, I mean, like, that could be part of his character. Like, that's probably why he's sort of become like this con artist. Like, he's just sort of given up on honor. Like, you don't really think that much about that because he's like a supporting character, but it's totally possible. I forgot all this stuff happened, like, at this point in the movie that they sort of figure out who she is and all this stuff. Before Rasputin comes back.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, trying for some closure. It's also, saying that, Anastasia's found her family, and so now she's almost, I wouldn't say moved beyond it, but has also, realized that she, she's a mature woman now, and she can actually live, survive for herself.
That that hedge maze looks like the hedge maze from The Shining.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. Oh.
I think those are they look like little, like, fleur-de-lis. And that are kind of carved into the edges there. Maybe not really.
It looks a little bit. It's reminiscent. You gotta wonder why Puka actually went in there in the first place. It's kind of leading poor Anastasia to her doom.
Well, he just got lost. I don't know. Or he was chasing after one of those weird, like, green bat things.
Maybe.
How did she make it all the way from that hedge maze to that bridge?
Time lapse? I don't know.
Thank you to my magical fart. I made it up to the real world again. I think they just chose Rasputin because you need to have, like, a strong villain for a movie like this, and,
Yeah, you can't just have like a communist.
Or like a random group of communists or something. Yeah. So Rasputin is a much more memorable villain, even though he wasn't actually the villain in real life. But well, he was sort of. But I mean, he was. Yeah, he didn't actually conspire to kill them.
Devious, yeah.
Oh, there's Bartok's moment of redemption, sort of.
Yeah, he's kind of forsaking his master to actually do what he believes in.
At least it's not as bad as the moment of redemption for that random chicken in Quest for Camelot. Where she's like, I'm good now! Why? I don't know, I just am! Whoa, green fart!
Cool Pegasus.
I forgot about this whole thing with the horse, too. That's also pretty cool. I don't know how I forgot this. What does that mean?
Das Vidanya? Goodbye, I believe.
Oh. Ooh.
Oh, it means, until we meet again.
Ah. There's a lot of really great use of, like, the 5.1 surround in this movie that I never noticed before either. Oh, there's the dog's useful moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Making up for leading her into danger. Kind of anticlimactic that it was that easy to defeat him, though.
Yeah.
Just crushes glass vial. Why didn't I make it out of metal instead? Uh-oh, it's this freaky death scene. Ugh.
Oof, it's Don Bluth, all right.
Yep. That's like the moment where it's like, wow, really? This was G? Okay. Kind of freaky for like young kids, but
this would be the moment in most films where it'd be like, I never got to say how much I loved him. Oh, my back is broken, I can't feel my legs.
Okay, I took some of it. Okay, I took all of it. Fine, whatever.
Kill that fucking dog. Get out of here! Try to get laid up in this bitch!
Just share your kiss and get it over with.
Get over it. This is the realization of identity for Anastasia. She believes, now she realizes that she's not just, you know, anchored by her family, but also that she's anchored by, you know, her own self.
Yeah. I just noticed the wedding ring on her. That be her aunt?
Hmm?
The old lady. Was that her aunt or her, like, great aunt?
The, Angela Lansbury?
Yeah.
That was her grandmother.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just never noticed the, like, wedding ring on her finger before. It's like, ugh, gross! Disgusting! What happened to Vlad and the other chick, though?
Well, they had Sophie over there with the grandmother. But I don't know where Vlad went.
That's kind of late. She doesn't even talk to him. She just like grabs him and kisses him. Like, oh, hey there!
My mouth! I don't even know who you are. I'm being raped over here.
She doesn't come back in the spin-off movie either. There's no pink bat in the Bartok movie. There's a version of Journey to the Past in this credits that's done by Aaliyah. That's also the music videos on the DVD. Which is kind of sad because Aaliyah sadly left us in, I think it was like 2002. She died in a plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Another one of those like credits where it has actual stuff going on. I forgot that they had this too. I thought it just cut to normal credits. Mm-hmm. Who does this song?
I'm trying to remember the woman, but the guy is Richard Marx.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Oh, yeah, I believe this is Aaliyah.
Are you sure? Because I don't think she does this song.
I don't know. Trying to find it.
Well, it's not like a huge deal to find out who does that. But anyways, we're finally at the end credits here. So do you have any like last thoughts for Anastasia, Will?
Well, I mean, I always liked it when I was a kid, you know. And,
oh, here's the Aaliyah song. Oh, sorry okay. to interrupt you. Okay,
no, that's
keep
fine.
Going.
That's fine. No, now I know. No, but I mean, I always loved it when I was a kid. And, no, I mean, now I realize all, you know, all the historical inaccuracies, you know, with Rasputin and the actual, you know, royal family, but, it still holds up. The quality still holds up, especially, you know, the animation. If you want to just watch it just for the animation alone, you can do that. You know, the voice acting is good, but, you know, it's still just definitely the memories that you have that you can tie this movie to, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the better Don Bluth movies, in my opinion, and one of his more overlooked films. I think a lot of people kind of... there's the phone again. A lot of people kind of make fun of this movie for trying to be a Disney princess movie, and I don't think that's what they were going for at all, really.
No, definitely not.
It's a completely different kind of film, and it's different than most other Don Bluth films in that, first off, he's not dealing with like animals or dinosaurs or anything. It's real people, and it's a real historical event. And, yeah, the animation definitely holds up. If you can pick up the Family Fun edition of this, it's definitely worth it. It's full of bonus features. And, yeah, I think I like this movie now than I even did when I was a kid. The more times I watch it, the more I realize that, hey, this isn't bad.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Apparently, the woman, just to go back a little bit, the woman that was at the sang with Richard Marx was Donna Lewis, who was a Welsh singer-songwriter.
Oh, okay.
Just, a little closure there. But, yeah, definitely.
All right, well, I guess that about wraps it up for our Anastasia commentary. So stay tuned for more commentaries. Probably going to do a few more Don Bluth films. And then who knows what we'll do. Just keep talking over movies, because that's what we do anyways, even when we're not recording. So for Dave and Will commentaries, I've been David Double D Dennis.
I've been Will, the Stash Man Stashnik.
And keep listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.